A new Atlanta Falcons stadium, a new Braves stadium, and a possible new arena for the Atlanta Hawks. Well, yes, all that could be happening. We know at least two will. In 5 years, all of Atlanta's major sports teams could be playing in new facilities, and all of their current stadiums or arenas were actually built in the 1990s.
And this week, we'll have a number of conversations about Atlanta's sports stadia, their history, and the future effect they'll have on an area in a series we're calling Under Construction, how Atlanta's stadium obsession is shaping the city. And we're starting it off with journalist Neil DeMoss. He's been following trends in stadium construction for years. And his book is Field of Schemes, How the Giant Stadium Swindle Turns Public Money into Private Profit. Mr. DeMoss, thanks for being with us.
Very good to be here.
Okay. We have seen, for instance, in lots of cities, not just in Atlanta, the drive to build new stadia and new developments around them. St. Louis, for instance, with its ballpark and the development around it. So, what are the forces driving these projects, not just in Atlanta, but around the country?
Well, the initial impetus for all of these stadium and arena projects is obviously the team owners, right? Starting maybe 25, 30 years ago now, owners of sports teams started to realize that they could get new buildings built by threatening to leave town, claiming that there would be, you know, huge economic windfalls from building new stadiums, and, you know, sort of playing the same kind of cards that a lot of other businesses, whether it was car plants or computer chip factories or whatever, had in saying, well, we'll only locate in your city or only stay in your city if you give us a whole bunch of public money. And it really accelerated in the early 90s, and, you know, Atlanta was in the first wave of that, and is now starting to come around again in the second wave, as team owners are starting to realize that you don't have to wait 30 or 40 years after getting your old stadium before demanding a new one.
But is Atlanta, in some ways, a little bit better off in terms of the public share that goes to paying for some of these stadiums? And, of course, Atlanta, we have multiple projects going on with different funding structures. But there are other cities where much bigger shares of public dollars have gone to these things.
It's not the worst city, absolutely, but, you know, the worst case there might be something like Indianapolis, where they spent several hundred million dollars on a new stadium for the Colts. They spent several hundred million dollars on a new arena for the Pacers. Then on top of that, they've given rent subsidies to the Pacers to keep them happy. It's sort of, you know, throwing good money after bad. That isn't necessarily to say that Atlanta's in a good situation either. You know, the Falcons Stadium, for example, was originally announced as a $200 million subsidy on a billion-dollar stadium, which sounds okay. Well, $200 million is a lot of money, but it's, you know, just 20% of this billion-dollar project, until it turned out that there were a lot of hidden subsidies, such as cash that was being saved up in terms of tax receipts that later on would go to pay for maintenance and improvements on the stadium later on down the road. And it winds up being closer to half the cost. So I don't know that necessarily Atlanta is doing well. It's not, like I said, it's not the worst city in the country in terms of being held up for stadium subsidies, but that's not necessarily something to brag about.
And Mr. DeMoss, I'm curious, because you look at the complex or the mothership of all, which of course is in Arlington, when you talk about new stadiums here and what the Cowboys play in. So, in looking at that, how often are teams looking at, okay, we've got to do something because the next big thing has come along, and we can't build something like Arlington, but maybe we need to have something similar to give the whole fan experience, which is what we hear a lot. And also, you can attract other things into your stadium besides when your football team may only play 10 games out of the year.
I think that the Cowboys Stadium absolutely had an effect on other NFL owners, that they all looked around and said, oh, you know, we got to get us one of those big scoreboards that runs the entire length of the field.
Yes, it's huge.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, it upped the ante. However, I don't think that it's something that most NFL owners would have pursued if they had to do it with their own money. You know, sure, fans would appreciate a giant video board. Sure, fans appreciate, you know, nicer clubs and nicer concessions facilities and things like that. But when you're talking about spending $1 billion on a stadium, that would be absolutely crazy if you were trying to make it back just on, you know, increased fan comfort and increased, you know, the increased amount you can spend charge for tickets based on that. So I think what's happened is when you have a situation where sports teams are able to push a lot of their costs onto the public, it becomes easier to say, oh, hey, sure, we'd like something new. You know, I remember years ago when the Orlando Magic were trying to get a new arena, only about 12 years after they had just gotten their old one, and I asked Rod Fort, who's a sports economist, you know, what's the shelf life of these things now? And he said, without missing a beat, I don't see anything wrong if you're a sports team owner with getting a new stadium every year, as long as you're not the one paying for it. And that's the key.
Well, right. That's exactly the key. And also, though, let's look at right now what's happening in Milwaukee. And is there anything different, you think, with Atlanta's situation? Because also now, as it relates to the new Falcons stadium, we will have a Major League Soccer team here as well. And there's always a push for this facility to be used for something else. But is Atlanta's situation any stand out in any different way when you look at, let's say, Milwaukee or what's happening in St. Louis, which is my hometown, by the way?
Sure. I mean, you know, what's happening in both Milwaukee and St. Louis is you had teams that are very much threatening to leave, right? The Bucks, whether or not they seriously were going to go somewhere like Seattle, had arranged this deal where the NBA sort of played bad cop for them and said, okay, we'll approve this sale to a new ownership group, but if there's no new arena, then we're going to buy the team back and sell it to whoever, which made it very easy for the team owners to then say, well, you know, it's not us who want to move, it's the NBA forcing us. And that, because of that, they were able to push through a very, very large subsidy deal. It winds up being about 90% of the cost when you include tax breaks that's being paid for by either state or county or city. And in St. Louis, again, this was, you know, you have a team that's threatening to go to Los Angeles because of this terrible lease deal that the St. Louis signed to get the Rams to move there in the first place, which guaranteed that the team would be able to break its lease and move if they didn't have a stadium that was in the top tier of NFL stadiums, which, again, talking about the Cowboys stadium, eventually you're not going to be in the top tier. So it's slightly different in Atlanta in that you didn't necessarily have that immediate move threat, but you see a lot of the same sort of arguments being made. You see the same arguments being made in terms of, you know, oh, it will create economic benefit. Oh, you know, this will all pay for itself in the long run because losing the team would be more devastating to the economy. Pretty much ask any economist you can find, and they will say there's no possible way that economically a team is worth hundreds of millions of dollars of subsidies. You know, it might be terrible for Rams fans or Bucks fans or Falcons fans if the team left town, but in terms of making it back, in terms of economic activity, that's never going to happen.
And I can tell you, as a kid growing up, there was nothing worse than seeing your beloved St. Louis Cardinals football team in the vans that rolled out as they went out to Phoenix. And it took a while for St. Louis to get a football team back. And that's, you know, for a fan, that is really, that's deflating. And you start to look at, okay, whose fault is this? Why has my team left the city? And I think that's a prime example, too, of what started with all these football teams sort of, all it takes is a hint, oh, they may be moving, and then people get nervous.
Absolutely. And it's a legitimate threat, you know, and I'm a huge sports fan, and I don't want to belittle anyone's fears of losing their team. One of the problems is that teams will threaten to move even when they aren't serious about it. I remember when the Pittsburgh Penguins were trying to get a new arena in Pittsburgh, and Mario Lemieux, the former Penguin star and owner of the Penguins, flew out to Kansas City to go and view their new arena. And, of course, everybody in Pittsburgh freaked out and was panicked, saying, oh, my goodness, the Penguins are going to move to Kansas City. We have to do something. They approved a new arena deal. And about a year later, someone asked Mario Lemieux, you know, what was all that going to Kansas City about? And he said, oh, you know, that was just to go and have a nice lunch. We were never seriously going to move. So it's hard to know when it's a bluff and when it isn't, and that's the biggest problem with a lot of these stadium deals, is that all the cards really aren't on the table. So you wind up deciding it based on some fear of a move or some promise of economic activity that you're allegedly going to get. And then when it turns out that the threat was false or the promise was false, you know, it's too late to do anything about it because you've already spent the money.
We're talking to journalist Neil DeMoss, author of Field of Schemes, How the Giant Stadium Swindle Turns Public Money into Private Profit. By the way, later this week, we'll be talking to Cobb County Commission Chairman Tim Lee about the Braves' move to Cobb County and that particular project and the financing of it. Mr. DeMoss, you said something, though, really interesting just a few moments ago where you said, look, they'll never make back the investment when it comes to in terms of economic development. Economic development will never make up for the money that a city or a county sinks into some of these stadium projects. What's the proof of that? Because that seems to be the underlying assumption that all these deals are bad, no matter how they're structured.
Well, I mean, obviously, it depends on the price point, right? If you spend $5 million or $10 million to build a billion-dollar stadium, then that's the kind of money that you might get back in increased sales taxes or something like that. But that's not the price that ever is given, right? We're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars. And at this point, innumerable economists have tried to study this. They have looked to see, have sales tax receipts gone up after cities have built new stadiums? No. Has per capita income gone up? No. You know, just tried to look at every possible economic factor and found that if there's any impact at all, it's so small as to be almost immeasurable.
But Atlanta, for instance, is a convention town, and it could certainly be argued that a really nice football stadium, combine that with a Major League Soccer franchise downtown and other events there, that's going to lure not just people, but perhaps conventions, which bring lots of money if it's a big one.
You can argue it, but there's really very little evidence, if any, to show that it ever happened. Mostly what happens in terms of, you know, having a sports team is it just redirects money, right? If people spend on the Braves, they're not spending on something else, whether it's another sports team or whether it's going to the movies, you know, going to dinner. It's taking their entertainment dollar and directing it a different place. And in terms of bringing people from out of town, sure, people will come from out of town occasionally to see a sports event. But a lot of those people are people who are in town already anyway, right? You know, last time I went to see a Braves game was because I was in town for something completely different. I didn't fly down for that, you know, specifically. So you wind up with an economic impact number that is way, way smaller, you know, on the order of like 10% of what the actual claims are. So, again, is there some economic benefit to having a sports team in town? Yes. Is there an emotional benefit to having a sports team in town? Sure. But does that then justify the kinds of price tags, kind of public price tags that are being put on these buildings? You will be hard-pressed to find more than one or two economists in this country that will believe that.
And Neil DeMoss, as we wrap up here, you talked about a range of emotions. I think people in Cleveland will definitely tell you about that and when Art Modell packed up the team and they went to Baltimore. Journalist Neil DeMoss, he has been following stadium construction for years. He wrote Field of Schemes, How the Giant Stadium Swindle Turns Public Money into Private Profit. Neil, thanks for kicking off this series for us. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to hearing the rest.